special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? We're back live with another episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell, here lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports and the guy that writes boxing articles on bchlonsports.com. Among other articles within sports, such as college football, basketball, baseball, and others. But, yeah, we're here to talk about boxing. Number to participate is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Pretty much had a eventful night in the sport of boxing last night. You had the fight card that was at the Mandalay Bay Events Center. You know, over there in Las Vegas. I mean, it's a pretty good venue. I've been there for a fight or two. You know, not bad seats in there. The one of the first big fights that I attended was at the Mandalay Bay Event Center. Title fight had Shane Mosley and Minka Wright many years ago, seems like now. But you know, still a good venue. They had boxing matches out there. So they held the second fight between, you know, Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev here at this venue, and of course this was for the light heavyweight championships, the WBA Super, the IBF, and the WBO, and looks like they may have added the Ring Magazine light heavyweight title to that. I have to, you know, be certain of that, because I've seen that they, you know, it floated around that they had, yeah, Andre Ward or Sergey Kovalev could get the Ring Magazine title belt. You know, for a while it was held by the Leno champion, Donna Stevenson, but, you know, for a good amount of time, Stevenson hadn't really fought anybody that was within the rankings for the Ring Magazine title. So it ended up being vacated, and they put, you know, the two highest ranked guys in the light heavyweight division there as, you know, who would be able to take that spot as the Ring Magazine champion there. So this was a, you know, matchup that, you know, a lot of people are looking at to see, you know, if Ward could prove that he was better than Sergey Kovalev. A lot of people thought that, you know, Ward didn't win the first fight. It was a very close unanimous decision, 114-113 all across the board for Andre Ward. So they pretty much, you know, gave him a 7-5, you know, with the knockdown that was in the second round by Sergey Kovalev on Andre Ward. But now, here it was basically, you know, up to Sergey Kovalev to, you know, prove that he was the better guy. But It just looked like, you know, when those, you know, first three or four rounds or so, kind of looked like it was the same type of fight. Very close, very tactical. A lot of fighting was done from a distance. Sergey Kovalev was trying to, you know, basically, you know, establish a jab and try to, you know, get more out of it there. You know, Andre Ward just looked like he seemed like he was going to be able to make the adjustments there. It looked like Andre Ward was looking for counters, especially within those first few rounds. So, against Sergey Kovalev, and, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, kind of expected Sergey Kovalev to, you know, try to come in there very aggressive, try to, you know, push the fight to Andre Ward. But, you know, as we saw in those first, you know, four or five rounds, just looked like, you know, Kovalev wanted to, you know, fight Ward at a distance. One thing I really didn't, you know, see out of Kovalev or even Andre Ward, you know, for most of the fight was a lot of power shots being landed flush. You didn't really see, you know, many uppercuts being thrown in the fight. You didn't really see, you know, many power shots being flush that were connecting on either fighter. Yeah, you did have, you know, a couple of counter hooks and a couple of, you know, right crosses that were landed by each of these fighters, but nothing really kind of like was landing very solid on either side. Now, within, I think it was like the fourth or fifth round, at the beginning of the fourth or fifth round, Andre Ward started out coming out with the, you know, with the right hook. Just throwing the right hook and, you know, trying to get, you know, a big connection out of that. So, you know, what his intention was to, you know, try to keep Kovalev honest or try to make him pay for, you know, trying to get to Andre Ward. And also he, like, kind of worked the inside game with Sergey Kovalev as well. I mean, I thought, you know, in the first, you know, few rounds, I pretty much thought that, you know, Kovalev would be a little bit more aggressive on the inside, you know, try to get a few, you know, good body punches in to kind of break him down. But that wasn't, you know, necessarily the case, you know, there. So, you know, and then it kind of started to take a toll, you know, after the fifth or sixth round or so. Once you had that, you started to see Sergey Kovalev getting tired, taking heavy breaths. And, you know, I would say his, you know, overall production didn't seem as crisp as it was in the first three rounds. And so, you know, his, you know, overall production, you know, kind of like dwindled a little bit, you know, within the sixth and seventh rounds. And then, you know, that's when, you know, Andre Ward started to pick things up a little bit as far as like his overall activity. And then in the eighth round is, you know, when Ward was able to get that counter, or not the counter right hand, but it was able to get in that right hand to stun Sergey Kovalev, and then was able to, you know, get in with the barrage of punches that really affected Kovalev, especially the punches to the body. And then he got him, you know, over to the ropes, over to his corner, basically. And then was able to, you know, get in with three left hands down to the body area in order to have referee Tony Weeks stop the bout in the eighth round. And so Andre Ward was able to score that eighth round TKO victory over Sergey Kovalev to retain the belts that he had and win the Ring Magazine Light Heavyweight Championship and stay undefeated now at 32-0. Right now, we got area code 205 live right now. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James? This is Mike Grady, man.
It was good, Mike.
Never much. Definitely a, if you're a Ward fan, a rewarding fight. It was a competitive match all around. The fight was, for the most part, very similar to the first fight in that it was very tough to score some rounds. You could see Kovalev making a point to, you know, keep his pace up or whatever, or even probably go at a stronger pace than he did the first fight. And so with the body attack and, you know, him going at that pace, obviously it was not sustainable, especially with somebody who's more superior than him as far as the win goes. Andre Ward didn't – they said they had a knee injury the first fight, so that's why he couldn't really move. And then for the most part, he just kept – you know how he just bent his head down and he just walked in without moving? I believe that for the first fight, yeah, he probably had a knee injury, because you saw this fight, he would at least dip down and then, like, slide to one side, then, like, slide to the other side as he do, you know how they do the rope drills, that type of thing? He would do that little move. And, you know, that would get him on the inside. He would do, like one little fail swoop, quick move, and get on the inside. And so he started doing the body work a lot earlier. And, I mean, the first couple rounds, I had him, like, split, I believe. They was going back and forth. I got my cards online, and I don't feel like looking at it. But, I mean, for the most part, I had an even fight. And then, as you said, the body work started really affecting him. And you could see Kovalev getting, like, extremely tired, like round five or six or something like that. You could see him getting, like, kind of tired. And then Ward was, like, throwing power punches. He was letting that left hook go. And, you know, he hit him with a few good right hands, too. Like, you could tell he was, like, hitting him to be like, you're going to feel what I'm, you know, you're going to feel this. And so with the last round, he got him hurt with the body shot or whatever. And then, you know, you could see Kovalev's character because, yeah, I'm sure the shots, they were borderline or whatever, and he was trying to get the ref's favor. And then, you know, doing those, like, wincing type moves and stuff. And so if I'm an opponent and I see him wincing and I already know that he gassed out the first fight quite naturally, that lets me know to keep hitting the same spot where he wincing at. And so, you know, they got him on the rope, you know, or Ward got him on the rope, and like you say, threw those three body shots, and even before that, he hit him with that right hand that really hurt him, and then he got him on the rope and hit him with the body shot, and you could see that he was demoralized. He was on the rope kind of just sitting. And so I watched two different versions of the fight. I watched the HBO telecast, and then I watched the Sky Sports telecast. And so Paulie Malignaggi brought up a point in that the fight was stopped too soon. Granted, I give him that. The fight should have went on. They should have let Kovalev go out on his shield or whatever. But what I can say, it would have got ugly, you know what I'm saying? Because I don't think he was going to recover from that, because he was hurt from the body and the head. And then he was just kind of like sitting in the fetal position on the ropes, just like sitting there like fetally, you know? And the way he was sitting, too, all Ward had to do was throw two more punches, and his head was, like, at the same level of him throwing that body shot. You know what I'm saying? That's how Kovalev hit. Yeah. He was sitting on the roof in a position where he was, you know, uncovered or unprotected. So Ward could have just threw two or three punches. Yeah, very unprotected. And, I think either way, like, yeah, he could have let him go on, and then Kovalev wouldn't have been able to make those excuses. But one thing I do say is that Kovalev is a sore loser. You know, he got beat, and the dude, instead of him being like, hey, you're the better man on this day, he's like, you know, excuse. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, his win was worse this fight than it was last fight. So when he was trying to blame his last strength and conditioning coach, talking about I overtrained, yeah, you might have overtrained, but guess what? Your win was better last fight. You made it through the last fight, even with all them body shots.
Yeah.
Well, it was a different fight, too, in that he caught Ward early. But nevertheless, his win wasn't better this fight, I don't think, in my opinion. And so, but what he didn't do, he didn't throw his new strength and training coach under the bus. You know, he didn't do that because I guess he has a lot of respect for him or whatever. But yeah,
yeah, found that interesting.
Yep, and I guess Virgil Hunter said that he was training him to knock him out, and don't be surprised if you know if he knocks Kovalev out. And I guess they knew that if they kept going to the body, that it would break him down, and you could see the dude's spirit leaving, and you saw it to where just his spirit was just broken. It was just broken.
Yeah.
Another thing that I saw was CompuBox. CompuBox, man. CompuBox, the announcers, all that stuff. That stuff is just – it's subjective, dog. I question it. You know, the way I read how it works is, you know, they have three or four scores around the ring. And anytime they see a punch, they'll press the button. And if it registers to where so many milliseconds within each other, they record it as a punch or something like that. That's how I read that it works or whatever. But whatever they use, it is not. It ain't the best. System. Cause a couple of them rounds, they talk about Kovalev threw this many more punches, and I was like, wait a second, he threw that many more punches? You know, like come on.
Yeah, well, like in the sixth round, actually the fifth in the sixth round, right? It's saying like Kovalev threw at least, you know, like 25 to 30 more punches than Ward did in those rounds, and you know, I kind of like question, you know, the whole thing with CompuBox stats too, but I mean, I kind of like reflected off of that Golovkin-Jacobs fight, because to me, I didn't feel like Golovkin threw as many punches as CompuBox said that he did in that particular fight, because it looked like more so that Jacobs controlled the pace of the fight in many of those rounds in comparison to what Golovkin was doing. So as far as like CompuBox is concerned, I'm not really, you know, all too into all of that, you know, now, because of how, yeah, you could throw that many punches, but how does that affect the pace and the control of the fight? You know, so it's like whether he threw more punches or threw this particular amount of punches, that's all subjective as far as, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I am with you on what Virgil Hunter was saying before the fight, having, you know, Andre Ward go for the knockout. I think, you know, we saw it, you know, the intensity of what Andre Ward was doing, like I was saying, at the fourth round and the beginning of the fourth round when he threw those right hooks. He was really trying to emphasize that he had power in his right hand. And so once he established that, and then he got that connection in the eighth round, that pretty much started everything. To where it was getting close to the end of the fight. One thing that I think Andre Ward, you know, took advantage of in this fight is that he paid attention to what Tony Weeks was saying in the pre-fight instructions, because a lot of people are talking about, he hit this guy low. Where Kovalev's belt line was, it was pretty much at his navel, you know.
Yeah.
So if Ward hits him at the belt line and he kills over, then Tony Weeks can't say nothing about it, because he already said that at the belt line is fine and then much below that is low. So there was like that point where it was like, I think it was the previous round, the seventh round or the sixth round, where Ward really like got him with the right hand right into that belt line. And Kovalev killed over, and Tony Weeks didn't say nothing. He said, yo, keep going, go. And you know, from that point, that kind of like tuned Kovalev off for like the rest of that fight, because, you know, he's thinking that, oh, man, I mean, I thought I would get something when, you know, I got hit in the belt, when Tony Weeks clearly instructed that belt line is kind of high, you know, on you. So if Ward hits you right there, that's going to be fine. And he showed that as far as like Ward is concerned too. So, I mean, Kovalev should have responded by doing the same thing or trying the same thing instead of, you know, trying to complain. And so he was like mentally broke down by the sixth or seventh round anyway.
Yeah, he was. And you know, trying to pretty much look to the ref to, like, you know, pretty much flopping in a sense. Like, I'm sure it hurt. It probably affected him mentally and physically, but at some point he was, like, you know, looking to for an excuse or so. You know, like he was looking for excuses or scapegoats or anything.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
know,
and I think that and it's going to what you were saying, you know, earlier as far as like what Kovalev did in the first fight, you know, making excuses there. So, you know, he was trying to, you know, get his way out of this fight here, you know, trying to sell that he was getting hit low and it you know, Tony Weeks didn't buy it. I wanted to get in area code 813 in here real quick. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Troll calling from Tampa. Definitely excited about this week's show. And even kind of just a follow-up with you on what you said. Unfortunately, I didn't see the fight. I'm going to try to catch it tonight. Second half, I can have a more analytical viewpoint of it. But my instant reaction is, wow, I'm actually mystified. Well, I won't say mystified. I'm just a bit shocked at this result. And just real quickly, in coming up to the fight, reading a couple articles, Virgil Hunter actually said they're training for the knockout. And to see it actually come to fruition is shocking in a sense. I'll say shocking because – and the reason why I say that, Ward only has 15 KOs at this point now, so he's not known for his power. He's not known for his power, you know. So that adds even more to the intrigue on the result of this actual fight. But I'll get back to you and still delve into some more, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was Virgil Hunter's intentions, you know, this time around in this Kovalev fight. And leading up to the fight, I mean, it just looked like, you know, Kovalev wasn't completely into it, wasn't completely motivated. You had, the final presser before the fight where, you know, he kind of, you know, said something about, you know, he was going to take Ward out and, you know, we was pointing at him and then, you know, Ward was saying, don't point your finger at me, bro. And then Kovalev just ended up walking, you know, out of the room there at the Mandalay Bay. So it just looked like he was basically out of sorts going into the fight anyway. He didn't look like he was, you know, basically focused for the fight in general and, you know, trying to do something that would, you know, kind of take Ward out of his game. I mean, I just felt like, you know, he did a little bit better in the first fight there than in the second fight. I was kind of like looking to see what he was going to do within those first three rounds to, you know, kind of be aggressive enough to, you know, get a big lead against Andre Ward, get a significant lead against Andre Ward. And, you know, while he, you know, was able to work the jab a little bit, it wasn't like he was, you know, taking full control of the fight. There was, you know, instances where he was scoring well with the jab and connecting with the jab like consecutive times, but he didn't follow up with it. And once he didn't, you know, once he wasn't able to do that, then that kind of like, you know, pretty much did him in. There were like some cases where he was, you know, up close in the clinch and, you know, kind of like tried to throw body shots in there, but it didn't look like, you know, they had much effect on Andre Ward. And the whole tie-up game just still seemed to be in Ward's favor, even though Tony Weeks was, you know, warning both fighters. Tried to like clean it up on the inside. It just still seemed like, you know, Andre Ward still had the advantage in the inside game. And so, you know, with that, it kind of like looked like, you know, Kovalev had to make adjustments and he couldn't do that. And there was like a video floating around social media with one of the assistant trainers of Kovalev. It's on YouTube and he's just saying that Kovalev really isn't a thinker in the ring. He's a fighter, but he's not a thinker. So if someone, you know, figures out his initial game, then he just can't do anything in order to adjust. And that pretty much, you know, signals the end for Kovalev as far as like winning a fight there. So I think that was like part of the whole thing that was a key factor here in this, you know, particular matchup, is that Ward, you know, has fought, you know, all these guys, different types of fighters, you know, before he fought Sergey Kovalev, but Kovalev really hasn't fought somebody, you know, the likes of Andre Ward. Mike,
yeah,
what do you say on that?
I think that, to your point about, well, I forgot exactly what you said, but it made me think of this. They, like, hindsight, looking at what Virgil Hunter said and, like, looking at how emotionally intense Kovalev was. I didn't even call it intense because it wasn't necessarily intensity. It was, like, emotional vulnerability. Like, imagine somebody sitting there just, like, rah, 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 yelling and, you know, doing impulsive things. That will let you know that they are less in control as opposed to the next person who will do something just to fuck with the next person, and then the other person just go off all on the handle and, like, you know, can't really handle it. And so that's what it
right.
looked like to me. It was like Kovalev was at the point where he's like, I'm so emotional, and, you know, and I'm going to take this guy out, and, you know, just all emotionally invested into it. And you know, invested in your emotions like that takes out energy too. And so he's all, like, emotionally invested, and then – which would mean that he gonna try so harder in the beginning, and then he burns out a lot quicker. Which I think the combination of the body shots, his adrenaline rushing, him being emotionally into it, you know, all that stuff makes you burn out quicker, and then all of that contributed to him getting stopped. You know, so hindsight, seeing how it led up to the events that it did, I can see how smart Ward's team is by coming at him, even with the John David Jackson scandal thing, you know, with just all of it, the way that they was treating him, they did the right thing to get his emotions so high to where all he did was, you know, it's like caffeine where you get that high, but then you kind of, what's it called?
Kind of like crash down after a little bit.
Crash. So he crashed. He had an emotional crash, and then, you know, war between him and body shots. So, yeah.
Hold on a sec. Let me see. Hey, is that 254? 254, you're on live. What's going on with you?
Hey, man, I was just trying to get some good feedback about the war fight. I'm just listening right now, man. Y'all keep up the good work. Peace.
All right, no doubt. I'll have you on mute here for a little bit. I'm going to just see here. You had a good little point there, Mike, as far as, like, Kovalev's overall psyche going into the fight. And I think one of the other things that kind of, like, contributed to it was the whole thing about how the contracts were done on both sides. On one side it was promoted by, well, I'd say co-promoted by Roc Nation Sports, and also – promoted by Main Events Promotions. And Roc Nation Sports gave, you know, Andre Ward a guarantee of $6.5 million for this particular fight, where Sergey Kovalev didn't get a guarantee going into this fight. And so the deal was that his pay was going to come from ticket sales of the fight and also pay-per-view buys. And I was trying to see here. I thought I had the number. Yeah, I did. They said they had 10,592 people there at the Mandalay Bay Event Center for the card there. So I don't know, like, how much money is going to get, you know, off of those ticket sales. And then who knows, like, how the pay-per-view buys are going to be. They're probably going to be fairly low for this particular fight. They're saying this in really early numbers was like around 100,000 or so, but I really doubt that even if it was at 100,000, that it'll come out to, you know, a good amount for Sergey Kovalev from this fight. And there also was something floating around that there was one case where Main Events paid Andre Fanfara just $1 for a fight that he had, you know, under Main Events. So, I mean, that – that just kind of like attributes to something that, you know, Kathy Duva and Main Events Promotions does for a lot of their fighters. And I think, you know, that also was a contributing factor to Kovalev not being completely into this second fight with Andre Ward.
And I saw a interview where she got mad at somebody where they fronted her on that. She's like, no, he's getting a 7-figure payday.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it was, you know, before the fight or not, or if it was like after the fight. But they were really, yeah, they were really getting on Kathy Duva's case, especially after the fight. I mean, there was like something where in the post-fight press conference, there was like, because she was like getting upset because there were a few fans out there that kind of like got into the press conference and started to say things to her and whatever. And she was like, oh, well, fans can't be in the press conference and we're only taking questions. And then, you know, somebody said, yo, I have a question. And he said, you know, is Kovalev going to stay for the whole press conference or is he going to leave early again? And then, like, people, like, was like, it was almost like a, what do you call it? Like, they were chewing Kathy Duva and Sergey Kovalev. And they were like, oh, and stuff like that. So they really put pressure on Kathy Duva after the fight.
And she responded like how he did, like getting all emotional and being like, you guys shut up, you know, and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And the thing about it is that in reference to this particular fight, it really isn't completely up to a Roc Nation to, you know, promote this particular fight. It's a two-way street. It doesn't just say Roc Nation Sports on the you know, in the arena or, you know, on the banners and things like that. It says Roc Nation Sports and Main Events Promotions. So it's up to them, too, in order to push the fight, in order to make it, you know, more successful for them and for their fighters. So that's pretty much on them. You know, real quick before I, like, continue on the Andre Ward, Sergey Kovalev talk, number to dial in is 347-237-5539, or you can get folks to listen in on Blog Talk Radio through the Go Long Media Channel. So 347-237-5539 to listen live over the phone, or going to the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio to listen to the podcast here. Yeah, back on to this thing with Andre Ward, you know, retaining the titles and, you know, getting the Ring Magazine Light Heavyweight Championship. As far as, like, you know, what he's going to do after this fight, I mean, initially before the fight, I thought that I wouldn't have been surprised if this would have been his last fight. A lot of people are clamoring for, you know, him to fight the WBC light heavyweight champion, Adonis Stevenson. But I've said it, you know, many times before, as long as he's with Roc Nation, he's not going to fight Adonis Stevenson while, you know, Al Haymon is the main advisor for Stevenson there. So I don't think that fight is going to happen. So they were potentially talking about, you know, him moving up to cruiserweight and then possibly moving up to heavyweight, you know, having like some big, you know, aspirations there. I don't really see much that's very lucrative for him in those divisions above him. I mean, yeah, you do have Anthony Joshua out there as a champ. You do have Deontay Wilder as a champ. You know, Joseph Parker as a champion in the heavyweight division, and in cruiserweight, there really isn't, you know, that much as far as, like, lucrative fights are concerned, unless if he goes overseas to fight Marco Huck or Tony Bellew or something like that. And, of course, I've been, like, very high on Oleksandr Usyk, the WBO cruiserweight champion, and I don't think that Ward will be able to handle Usyk there at the cruiserweight division. So, what do you think Ward should do here from this from this point?
Like, should he, like, what should he do next?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's nothing left for him but risk at the light heavyweight division. So, fighting Adonis Stevenson, he said it himself, it don't make sense. Like, if Stevenson maybe beat Kovalev and then sometime down the road, yeah, maybe then it would make sense. Maybe then people would say it's an interesting fight. But Ward becoming the undisputed champion, like, it don't mean that him being the unified and beating the man in the way that he did makes him the man. Like, he don't gain anything by fighting Adonis Stevenson. What he will gain is if he fights, say, the likes of Anthony Joshua, as him and his coach called out, and they said they saw something in Anthony Joshua. I can tell you what they see in Anthony Joshua. The dude will fizzle out in 3 to 5 rounds, and he probably won't be able to hit Andre Ward because he's too, like, slug-footed. And, you know, like, he's just like a bodybuilder. Like, don't get me wrong, the dude legit. Yeah, that fight, Ward could win by boxing and not get touched none of that fight and become a heavyweight champion. And, you know, people say how great he is, but it's just a testament to what I've been saying. This is why Deontay Wilder will beat this dude ass, because everybody else see his flaws. He's slug-footed. He get tired in 3 to 5 rounds. And as long as you can move and be mobile, you could beat this dude all day. As long as you don't stand there and be just a target to hit, Andre Ward and his coach feel like they can beat the man. That's saying something. That speaks volumes. If a dang super middleweight can beat him, then, okay, I'll be real. If a light heavyweight can beat him, then don't you think a real heavyweight who can punch can beat him? I do.
If that's what you say, I think it's basically a money move. I mean, if anything, I would, you know, try to go after Joseph Parker. I mean, it's not like, you know, when Roy Jones came up from light heavyweight to heavyweight to, you know, go after a heavyweight champion. He didn't go straight after Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis. He went after, you know, John Ruiz. And so, I mean, the thing about it is that, you know, John Ruiz was out there, you know, holding the heavyweight championship, but, you know, after he beat John Ruiz, he couldn't get anything done as far as, like, fighting a Lennox Lewis or, you know, Evander Holyfield. And I'll tell you this right now, Anthony Joshua is no John Ruiz, not even close. Terrell, it looks like you're back online. What's your comments about Andre Ward possibly moving up to cruiserweight or heavyweight?
Yeah. And just quickly, because, like, we kind of talked last night in the group, I posed the question, is there a possibility of Ward fighting Stevenson? And he says probably not going to be the case due to the fact that Stevenson is with the dude's name that manages their body.
Heyman.
And kind of like we talked about before in the previous weeks, if Ward does win and he has won at this point, what's next for him here at 175? And like you guys said back then, there's not a whole lot left for him. I mean, Kovalev was the pinnacle of the division. And now that he has two now definitive wins over Kovalev, what's next? I mean, there's not any up-and-coming stars at 175. There's not really anyone that can move up, that can push Ward. So my question for you guys, where did this talk of Ward going to heavyweight come from? Because when I saw that last night, initially it sounded ludicrous to me. I'm like, heavyweight? What?
All right, let me explain it to you, Terrell, where it came from. So after the fight, Virgil Hunter said, after the fight, Andre Ward, somebody said, maybe it was Andre Ward first. He was like, yeah. Nevertheless, one of them said it, said that they think that there's nothing left in the light heavyweight division. And so if they moved up to heavyweight, it would have to make sense. And the person that makes sense is Anthony Joshua. And then from Virgil Hunter's own mouth, he said that we see flaws in Anthony Joshua's game, and we think we could take advantage of those flaws and beat him. And then Andre Ward followed that at the press conference and said, you know, this is the type of thing that my coach, this is why I'm competitive, because my coach pushes me and makes me, you know, believe stuff that I've never really thought about, you know. And so he was like, if he believe it, then yeah, I believe it. And so nevertheless, they said they see flaws in Anthony Joshua. Obviously, the flaws are Joshua has no win, and he'll probably fizzle out within 3 to 5 rounds, and he's like slug footed, and he probably wouldn't land on Ward. And so I'm gonna repeat myself just because if they see flaws in Anthony Joshua, what do you think will happen if Anthony Joshua fights an actual heavyweight who can move and just stay away? As long as you're not just standing there in front of him, Deontay Wilder going to beat this man ass. But, yes, they said they saw flaws in Anthony Joshua, and they want Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, hey, Terrell, I'm sorry, but I gotta do this first. Hold on.
What a clap sound! You should have put a clap sound out to me. A standing ovation.
What's wrong with you,
man? I mean, I applaud your unwavering confidence in Deontay Wilder.
Answer me this.
Unwavering, never fades, never weakens at any point. I applaud
answer
that.
Me this, Dave. Can you answer this question for me?
All right.
What do you think it is that a super middleweight, his coach says that we want Anthony Joshua and we want to fight Anthony Joshua? Okay. Anthony Joshua is the only heavyweight that it really makes sense to take a risk for, because they're not gonna go overseas. That's for sure. Anthony Joshua had to come over here. I don't think they're gonna go across seas.
Nah. Okay. I'll put it to you this way. Right. So he, like, Andre Ward could easily go to cruiserweight, right? He could easily go to cruiserweight. And he could fight the likes of Maris Brites. He could fight the likes of Oleksandr Usyk. He could fight, you know, Denis Lebedev or Murat Gassaev or, you know, or Krzysztof Głowacki or anybody that has held or is currently holding a championship in the cruiserweight division. But there's no money, there's no interest in that fight, in any of those fights. You know, so he's like, what's the point of me going up to cruiserweight to fight those guys if, one, there really isn't that much interest in me myself, you know, coming from the American side, and then hardly many of those boxing fans would know about a Denis Lebedev or a Gassaev or Maris Brites who just won the vacant WBC cruiserweight championship. So why not move up to take on the guy that has the most momentum in the heavyweight division right now, and that's Anthony Joshua. I mean, I'll tell you this from a social media standpoint, more people are talking about Anthony Joshua right now because of what he did to beat Vladimir Klitschko. You know,
yes,
so my thing here's my question back. Okay.
You didn't answer my question.
But here's my thing. What does Andre Ward gain by facing Deontay Wilder right now?
You're right. What does he gain? Nothing but trouble. He don't gain nothing but trouble, because the risk behind Deontay Wilder is that Deontay Wilder has this hit stick that he's going to get touched at some point. It's safe to say that Ward will get touched at some point. You know, he probably won't take none of the punches clean, because after round three, he'll be fine. But Wilder has more risk, reward. You're right. Joshua has more money. But nevertheless, Virgil Hunter
the
said
risk
out his
is
mouth,
the same.
We see some things that we can capitalize off of him, and we feel like we can beat him. He said from his own mouth that Joshua would have the size and strength advantage, but we would have the IQ and skill advantage, and we think we can exploit that and beat him. What do you think?
And you don't think that Andre Ward would have the IQ and skill advantage over Deontay Wilder?
Of course he would. I'm not saying he would not. But what I'm saying is, okay, what I feel like you're saying is that there's no upside in them fighting Deontay Wilder. But they would have said that we see something that we can exploit in the Wilder too. Wilder is too much of a wild card. You're right, a risk reward. He's too much of a wild card. But it's obvious to see the flaws that they see in Anthony Joshua. This dude ain't got no win. And he ain't gonna be able to touch this guy. After like round three, it's gonna be over. All he's gonna have to do is just keep boxing this guy. It's gonna be an easy win. So what I'm saying is, what do you think is there for them to say they see something, and they say from both of them, say from their own mouth, we think we can beat this guy. We see flaws. We can beat him.
Yeah, and I'll add in one thing real quick. I'm not taking up for Joshua at all, but keep in mind that this guy's, what, 18-0, 19-0, whatever it is, and this is he's now his beginning ascension of being on top. So, yes, he has flaws. Wilder has flaws. Every fighter has flaws. But for Joshua, just to focus on him, yes, he has flaws with his slow feet. So how about we give them a chance to correct that, you know? So let's see what he displays in his next 2-3 fights to see if they can correct that. In some cases, we have seen where people deficiencies in their game, and sometimes we don't see it, you know. Some things can be corrected, like brittle hands, things like that. When can be corrected? That can be corrected. But, I mean, let's give them a chance to see that. But like I said, obviously sitting back from far, someone like Virgil Hunter, who's very technical in boxing, can sit there and analyze Joshua and say, yep, yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely some merits in what you're saying. But at the same time, I say give him a chance to correct that, you know. And the only way we can do that is to see him fight and see if it's going to linger or go away, you know.
Yeah, it's basically a wait-and-see approach, and it's interesting that, you know, it comes from Virgil Hunter. I mean, he's gotten a guy in Andre Ward that has, you know, all of these skills that, you know, who hasn't really lost a fight since he was 12 years old. It's just that, I mean, sometimes it's just the right match with him and Andre Ward. He doesn't really get it, you know, from, you know, other notable fighters that he's trained, you know, such as Amir Khan and Andre Berto, you know, among
Amir
others. But he gets it out of Andre Ward.
Amir Khan was winning the Canelo fight, though.
He was doing well in that Canelo fight. But, I mean, to me, it was, you know, only a matter of time. And we really haven't seen Amir Khan since then. We don't even know, like, if he's going to fight anybody this year. You know, he hasn't fought since that, May fight of last year. And, of course, you know, pretty much now we're getting into that Ramadan section, so he's not going to fight during that either. So if there's anything, he would have to, you know, fight, you know, in the fourth quarter of this year, if anything. If he's going to be available, you know, out there.
Yeah.
Yo, we got like about 10 minutes or so live on this show before we go into overtime. So if anyone wanted to get in, you call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on Q to talk on the show. We'll probably get into the Mayweather-McGregor talk on the overtime section of the show, if not here within these 10 minutes. But I wanted to get touch on that co-feature of the Ward-Kovalev rematch, and that was Guillermo Rigondeaux going up against Peter Moises Flores for his WBA super title at super bantamweight and the IBO super bantamweight title that Moises Flores had. And you know, pretty much went through one round, and, you know, Rigondeaux was looking like he was timing Moises Flores, even though Flores looked like he was telegraphing a lot of his punches, really, like, screaming out before every punch he was throwing. And so Rigondeaux kind of, like, timed his punch and, you know, ended up hitting him with counters and timing him with jabs, but You know, going into that closing part of that first round, you know, you had Rigondeaux kind of like holding with his, I think he was like holding with his right hand over the head and then throwing body shots with his left. He threw like three body shots. And then referee was kind of like coming in to warn Rigondeaux about that. And then the bell rang and both Flores and Rigondeaux threw a punch. Rigondeaux hit him flush on the chin, stunned Flores, and he ended up going down to the mat. Referee looked very indecisive in this particular instance, almost like he didn't know what was going on. And so he tried to get a couple of replays, you know, out there or something like that. Vic Draculich was trying to get replays and trying to, you know, discuss with other officials what was his decision going to be. And instead of going ahead and making it a no contest, he ended up ruling it a knockout victory for Guillermo Rigondeaux. So as of right now, Rigondeaux is undefeated with 18-0 with 12 KOs. But, you know, latest reports out there that, you know, by Monday, this might end up being changed to a no decision. So even though, you know, he'll still be, you know, undefeated, they'll probably take this back, this win back from him. But after, you know, after the fight, he was pretty much saying that he's kind of like begging for, you know, other people to fight him. He said, you know what, why don't I just give up my titles and give them to, you know, these guys so that they'll be able to fight me. You know, I mean, you have, you know, guys out there, and he's saying, he's calling out, you know, the likes of Lomachenko and Leo Santa Cruz and, you know, another fight with Carl Frampton. You know, all those guys that are out there, he's saying, why not come out there and fight me? He really isn't, you know, talking about anybody that's in the super bantamweight division right now, like a Ray Vargas or Jason Magdaleno or anybody like that. He's saying, why not, you know, him having to move up to, you know, featherweight to kind of like go after those guys, because Santa Cruz and Frampton, you know, and actually Scott Quigg too, also, you know, moved up so they wouldn't fight Guillermo Rigondeaux. So it's like he's, you know, still out there begging for fights to try to prove that he's, you know, the best around that weight class. So what's y'all comments about Guillermo Rigondeaux and, you know, what happened in this particular fight and why other guys aren't willing to fight him?
Shoot, I can tell you what, I'm always thoroughly impressed watching this guy defense. It's like they be talking about Lomachenko being the Matrix, Rigondeaux the real Matrix person. You see how effortlessly this guy, like, does that little in-and-out move where he, like, ducks down and ducks under the punch. And it was like when he was doing it to this guy, it was just – he was doing it so comfortably. Like, in some of them, he'd do it faster. But this one, he was doing – it seemed like he was doing it slow, too. So it was just – I was like, damn, I ain't going to even lie. I sat there trying to do that move. I'm not going to even lie. I did. I tried to do it. I'm a little slower than he is, but, you know, it's fine. I tried. But, yeah, man, it's they guys, I would be very interested in seeing Lomachenko and Rigondeaux fight to see, you know, an offensive barrage against a defensive barrage who got power and offense. As far as the fight is concerned, Max Kellerman made a point to where he said, since they both were engaging, even though it's after the ring, is it still the rules where you protect yourself, you know, at all times, which I think that should be the case. Worst case scenario, yeah, it's a no contest, no decision, whatever. But they both were definitely engaged at each other, and the fact that they both were engaged and they both threw a punch, the dude got hit from them both throwing a punch, even though it was after the round had sounded. And so with that being said, I don't think that it is justified to where them giving him the knockout because they both were engaging. But at the same time, if you do go by whatever rules, yeah, it should not be no disqualification at all. No disqualification. Worst case scenario is no decision. But the realistic thing I think should happen is that he just get the KO in.
Yeah, I don't know what they say as far as like replays are concerned in reference to the sanctioning rules, but you know they ended up ruling it a KO when it could have been a ruled a no contest right off the bat and then and then moved on, but they just gave bringing out the KO victory, and so we'll see if they'll end up reversing it here on Monday.
What
you got to say about bringing down?
I tell you one thing about Jim Lampley. Like it was kind of sad to see. It ain't sad. I guess it's expected. But the whole time when they had awarded Rick and Dial the fight or whatever, Jim Lampley called the executive director or commissioner, whoever over of the whatever he was commission, the Nevada State Commission. And so he called the guy over there and was like, so in this situation, what should happen? And so he was like, the commissioner guy was like, well, we were told that the punch was landed before the bell. And since the punch was landed before the bell, it's emphatically a knockout. And so Jim Lampley was like, so are you telling me that if it was landed after the bell, that this could possibly be changed? And so the guy was like, well, told that it was landed before the bell, so that's not even a concern. So Jim Lampley was like, I understand where you're coming from, but what if I told you that it landed after the bell, and what if I can show you that? So he ended up showing the dude the replay, and he showed that it was landed after the bell. So he was like, so tell me this. Since you see that it was landed after the bell, should this be a disqualification? And so the guy was looking like you motherfucker, I can't believe you doing me like this on national TV or whatever. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't looking like that. Do you think he was looking like that, James?
Well, I mean, I was watching it through, Sky Sports, so I got the Paulie analysis, but I did hear about, what Lampley was saying, like, oh, it should be a disqualification, and they should do this to him, and whatever it was. I mean, I kind of like, viewed that as, his, it kind of like he almost has like a dislike for Rigondeaux. Being who he is. So that's how I kind of like viewed it.
Yeah. And so pretty much he pretty much showed the commissioner, whatever his guy's name was, and was like, hey, so you're saying that if this was exactly what I said, it should be changed. So he got the guy to say on national TV, yeah, you're right, that should be changed or whatever. And then he was like, well, we're going to go back and look at it and, do the right thing, blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, are you kidding me, guy? Are you serious? And so Max Kellerman was like, so tell me this, since they both were engaging, should it be a no contest since they both were engaging? And in that, it would be, the rules should be, protect yourself at all time. And so the guy was like, and maybe Jim Lampley said something after that, but then the guy was like, no, just, if it landed after the bell, it's emphatically a disqualification, but we'll go back and, do the right thing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, are you kidding me? They're trying to screw this man over? And when he had no point of being, in danger in the fight.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just seemed like, Lampley just wanted a loss on Rigondeaux's record, just so he would have, that loss on his record, and you could say that, hey, he got a loss just like Lomachenko got a loss or something like that. So, I mean, I think that was like kind of like a personal vendetta against Guillermo Rigondeaux. All right, Terrell, what you got?
Yeah, real quick, I'm sorry, just to jump back into the last ring real quick, but Andre Ward is sadly the number one pound for pound boxer after this win and after how he got the win. So it would be nice to see him get all the respect that he deserves from all the sanctioned bodies, talking heads, however. Andre Ward is number one pound for pound, period. And it's just going back on to the Rigondeaux fight. And, well, is that it's kind of sad in the sense that the fight ended the way it did. I've seen people will say that it should have been at least a no contest, at least. But at this point, it is what it is. We've seen worse decisions. We've seen worse instances of happening in boxing. But aside from that, he got the win. But my main thought again for this, for Ringdahl, is intrigue. And I know I've used that whole word tonight already. I'm used to getting intrigue. The intrigue of him fighting a Lomachenko, that would be a beautiful boxing match. To see that speed, to see that command of skill set employed by each boxer, that would be a beautiful boxing match. So, and the idea of him wanting to fight people with Frampton, all the people within in and around the division, it just adds so much intrigue to that lower weight class. And I tell you right now, even though these little victories that Ringdahl is getting at this point now, they're not just top tier people. But I tell you what, people have better be afraid of this guy, because I think with that hunger that he still has, these victories he's getting one by one, albeit controversial like the one from last night, this guy is scary. This guy is scary. The way he's putting these little victories together right now, he's making the statements out there. And the fact that he wants to fight. And what's so funny, we know he got blackballed for so long time in the past, because he didn't have that mixing us out. Well, now he had a point of reference. Knocked the guy out last night, breaking like Mike referenced the whole time. Both kids all over in England. He's getting these victories. And they're emphatic wins at this point. He's getting scary to me. So I think all the people in and around that division need to be warned. But we could see Lomachenko rigging up fight, even Frampton, even Santa Cruz. You know, I'm telling you right now, as much as I love Santa Cruz, people should be scared of this guy. They should really be scared of this guy. His pinpoint, his accuracy, and still hungry. That's the main thing. Hungry to want to prove himself on that top level, give him top point. So be wary of rigging up, definitely so.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been really interesting to see if they would have been able to match, Ringdahl with Lomachenko. But I just don't think that Lomachenko will, end up facing Ringdahl. I mean, Ringdahl can make all the concessions he wants, but the thing with Lomachenko is, while he might be inclined to want to face, Ringdahl, there's somebody by the name of Bob Arum that doesn't want to put him in front of Ringdahl, because if he ends up losing to Ringdahl, there'll be another guy that, Top Rank has that they tried to boost up, and then Ringdahl, ends up facing him and then beating him, and then basically, just makes him almost, irrelevant in the eyes of public relations are concerned. So he doesn't want him to go through the same thing, that, happened before, with Nonito Donaire, a few years ago. So he doesn't want to go through that again. Bob Arum doesn't. So that kind of puts him there in that field where he's kind of stuck to where he just doesn't want to put a lot of his guys out at risk and with fighters that he probably knows has a chance to beat those guys. It's almost the same, thing with not putting Manny Pacquiao in the ring with Terrence Crawford, because he feels that Terrence Crawford will beat Manny Pacquiao, and then that'll be it for Manny Pacquiao as far as his career is concerned. All right, we're here in the overtime section of the show here. I just wanted to touch on, of course, what went down on Thursday afternoon as it was announced that, it's finally going to happen. You're going to have Floyd Mayweather going up against Conor McGregor in a boxing match. It'll be August 26th in Las Vegas. They're saying it's going to be at the T-Mobile Arena, tentative that it's going to be there. But, one of my friends sent me a link that through Boston Scene, that date at the T-Mobile Arena is reserved for a, 3-on-3 basketball game with that new league that Ice Cube is starting up. It's basically up in the air as far as like where it's going to be confirmed, either at the T-Mobile Arena or maybe at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, because T-Mobile is, you know, still is under MGM. So that's pretty much up in the air as far as like where it's going to be located. But the fight is signed. It is agreed August 26th. And, you know, of course, they have like a lot of, you know, people, you know, talking about it. A lot of people are upset. They're saying, oh, man, this is going to kind of Floyd Mayweather's 50th fight, and it shouldn't count. And it shouldn't count this as his 50th fight. I'm like, well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, they knew it was going to be a boxing fight. It wasn't going to be counted as an exhibition. This is not, you know, like Muhammad Ali going up against Antonio Inoki in an exhibition match where they allowed Inoki to do wrestling moves. This is an actual boxing match. I mean, James Toney was able to go into MMA and be in a MMA fight with Randy Couture, and that was a MMA fight. Ray Mercer was able to go into MMA himself and, you know, get a win there in MMA. So, I mean, here's the flip side. And one thing for me, I mean, if Floyd didn't know that he would get as much guaranteed money as he is going to in this fight, then he wouldn't take it. I mean, he's already, you know, surpassed those $40 million and $35 million and whatever guarantees that he's had, you know, fighting, you know, the likes of Canelo Alvarez and Manny Pacquiao. And he knows that there's no other fighter out there that'll bring him that much, you know, guaranteed money. So he's going after, Conor McGregor, the number one guy as far as like a pay-per-view in mixed martial arts here. So opening thoughts. I'm going to start with Terrell first and then Mike Grady.
You know what? It's probably going to take me another week or two to really gather how I feel about this. As being a boxing purist, yeah, I know this is a boxing match. I know, I understand that, but and then on top of that, for Mayweather to get you that this 50-0, being a boxing purist, I want him to fight that against a real boxer. That's my initial way how I feel about it. You know, I mean, I'm not going to try and throw a name out there who I want him to get that fight with. And truthfully, I probably would have been even halfway okay if he'd have fought Pacquiao for a second time. I probably would have been halfway okay with that. But he was fighting Conor McGregor. And we understand boxing is a business. And this right here, this big business right here, big business. And it's just funny just to see the detractors and proponents of the event. Like I was reading the last week about how Golden Boy De La Hoya, they're pretty much hating on the event, and the anger that we're seeing with that is because they're not involved. They're not making any money from that. So you understand that. But on the other side, proponents of this event, people are just want to see this just for the trying to think of a good word here, just for the farce that it is, a boxer versus MMA. You got two people, and basically all they're doing, they're capitalized on their fan base. I mean, McGregor obviously has a worldwide fan base, and so does Mayweather at this point. And you guys remember probably about 6 months ago when we talked about some stuff on the show about the possibility of this fight. You guys remember when Mayweather was over in England doing some quote-unquote promotions, stuff like that, when he did a European tour. And now we're now seeing that come to fruition. And like I said, boxing is a business, and this is the pure result of this right now, what we're about to see. So as a purist, I'm trying to shun about it a little bit, you know, but at the same time, I do understand that. But like I said, back to the one point, I would love to see him go for his 50-0 against a pure seasoned boxer. So right now, it is what it is. I mean, it'd be something I'd be interested in. I wouldn't necessarily go buy it, you know, because like I said, being a boxing purist, but I mean, like I said, it is what it is. So that's my initial thought on it right now.
Yeah. Mike, what's your take on it? And then I'm gonna have a little bit to add on to what y'all are saying. Oh, you there with us, Mike? Hold on, let me check something real quick. Hey, Mike, you back?
Yeah. I am here, but I don't have much to say on the fight because the only thing I have to say is that people are probably going to be disappointed. Mayweather may do the same thing that he did in the Pacquiao and the Madonna one fight where he goes to the ropes and he just covers up and pretty much makes it exciting for the casual fan and then let McGregor, like, do that for maybe two or three rounds. And outside of that, it won't be exciting unless Mayweather just go to the ropes and, like, just sit down and say, hey, hit me. But, I mean, it's an entertainment spectacle, WWE-type thing. And I guess I'm not excited for it because, yeah, I'm glad, sure, it's happening. That's all I can say. I'm a little positive.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about it. I think that, you know, Floyd Mayweather had, you know, gotten to the level where he wanted to be a he wanted to have crossover appeal, and that's what, you know, made him get the amount of money that he was getting for these, you know, fights that he had, you know, under Showtime before, you know, he ended up, you know, fighting Andre Berto for his last fight. So he had, you know, a lot of guaranteed money coming from CBS Showtime, you know, from that six-fight deal. And so he was like, well, you know, kind of like I was saying before, he kind of reached the pinnacle as far as, like, amount of guaranteed money that he was going to get, you know, fighting guys. So unless if he, you know, had another fight against Manny Pacquiao, but the demand would have been lower there from this fight than it was for the first fight. And so you have your Manny Pacquiao, who he's already fought. You have, you know, Canelo Alvarez, who he's already fought. And, you know, of course, they had that open possibility of him fighting Gennady Golovkin. But the thing about it is that I don't think he really saw much guarantee out of fighting Gennady Golovkin that he would fighting anybody else. So once those, you know, fight talks were, you know, buzzing, you know, outside of the boxing world, which is part of the objective here, is to get people that aren't usually into the sport of boxing to come on and, you know, buy this pay-per-view to not just see, you know, Mayweather fighting Conor McGregor, but to see, like, other boxers, you know, take part in the fight card. I mean, I think that, you know, they're trying to get, you know, Gervonta Davis involved in this fight card. They're trying to get Badu Jack involved in the fight card and try to see if there's, like, you know, anyone else that would be involved that could, you know, be able to get into this thing here for August 26th. So, I see this as an opportunity to get, you know, people that are, you know, MMA fans that are exclusively MMA fans to kind of see what happens in the sport of boxing and kind of, like, you know, invest their money into the sport of boxing to see what's going on there on, you know, that side of the fence as far as, like, combat sports are concerned. Because, I mean, you have guys there that kind of like both MMA and boxing, but there's some that like MMA and don't watch boxing, and those that watch boxing and don't really get into MMA all to themselves. So I think this is something that's also part of a marketing scheme to where they're able to get people that are not part of, you know, the sport of boxing, so to speak, to get into it and see what, you know, other fighters have, you know, in their repertoire to, to see if they want to follow them as far as, like, their future fights are concerned. So I think that's part of the plan, too. But, you know, there's still, like, you know, a good amount of months or weeks left, a couple of months left in order for this fight to, you know, go down. So we'll see what happens here in the next couple of weeks, how that's going to, you know, iron itself out. I mean, we've, you know, had, you know, fight announcements that have taken place, you know, out of nowhere. Of course, like the Adrian Broner, Mike Garcia fight. So that's something there that is something that I'll probably, like, wait out and see what happens, to see if anyone else gets involved in that August 26th card. One other news tidbit that I crossed over within the past couple of days, they had that tournament going on that's supposed to, like, involve a, you know, a few fighters from a couple of divisions that would be started by Richard Schaefer. One of the weight classes that it'll have is the it'll have that super middleweight division. They made an announcement that George Groves is going to be, you know, the first fighter that says that he's going to be involved with that overall tournament. So he'll be a part of the, I would say, eight super middleweights that will be involved in that particular tournament. So we'll see if George Groves will be able to get in there with, you know, other guys that are going to be part of this this tournament. I think that they'll probably have a couple of other guys involved with it as well, probably Callum Smith or maybe even they'll have Chris Eubank Jr., who, you know, recently moved up to the super middleweight division, be part of it as well. So that'll be something there that we'll wait and see how that's going to be ironed out within the next couple of months. One of the other things that I did notice here in the past day that in interviews, someone interviewed Errol Spence Jr. He's looking forward to having his first defense of the IBF welterweight championship after getting it from Kell Brook over in Sheffield, England. He said that he wouldn't mind facing Danny Garcia over in Dallas as his first title defense. He said that, I mean, Danny Garcia really isn't, you know, fighting anybody. He doesn't have anybody scheduled. So he's like, why not have Danny Garcia be the first guy to go after his belt there for the IBF title? That would be a pretty good high-profile fight there for the welterweight division. So I wouldn't, you know, mind that happening instead of, you know, Errol Spence Jr. Having a, you know, voluntary defense against, like, maybe a Saddam Ali or Luis Collazo or something like that. So see if, you know, they could have Danny Garcia be part of those IBF rankings and, you know, just have a voluntary defense against Danny Garcia. So what's y'all thoughts about that potential fight between Spence and Garcia?
Well, me personally, I would love that. And my initial reaction is kudos to Spence. One name I threw out there a while back was inviting Saddam, someone like a Saddam Ali. And just look at this anymore. It's, you know, we see a lot of people, they get a title, right, and they'll fight. Let's look at Garcia, for example. He got his title. He had a great win against Khan, Maidana. We know that. But once he got that title, his competition level digressed. And it's kind of like, what are you doing? And one point his father made in during that reign, but hey, this is a business. And yeah, basically you're taking some and said, stay busy fights to make some money. Like we've seen a lot of other champs do, and are still doing at this point right now. So, but for Spence, like I said, if he could slowly work in a top a list of opponents he's fighting going forward from Kell Brook, Saddam Ali, Garcia, Alexander. I'm just throwing names out there at this point. If he can just slowly work those names into his list and secure victories, man, in 2-3 years, this dude's going to be unbeatable. And my question now for this, the prospect of a Garcia fight, you know, what's up, Garcia? You don't have a belt. You lost your belt. And what better way to prove yourself is to get back in the ring and fight for a title, you know? So this says a whole lot about Garcia, his father, and Garcia himself. Would they allow him to get into a ring and fight for a belt? And like I said, and at the same time, so much big up to for Spence for putting that name, that type of name out there, you know? So this is something that we haven't seen in boxing. And so it's so refreshing to see it come back and be on the cusp of happening where we have a single fighter that's actually fighting people. You know, so these names outside of the top 25, in lower tier top 25, stuff like that. So I would love to see a Spence Garcia, a Spence real fight. Love to see that. Spence, I'm sorry, yeah, Errol Spence. Love to.
Yep. Yeah, I would love to see that, too. It would be a very good matchup to see, you know, where both fighters would be at the point of their careers. You were talking about Garcia and how, yeah, he was able to have those fights against, you know, Maidana and Khan and Lamont Peterson, but also, you know, those fights against Guerrero and, you know, others where it kind of like seemed like, why are you fighting these guys? So, this would be something that would be where you could measure where Garcia is at this point of his career. What should you say about that, Mike Grady? I think he might be on hold or something. Let me check. Hey, Mike, you got something on Errol Spence?
Can you repeat what you said on Errol Spence one time? I tuned out. I'm sorry.
Yeah, possibly fighting Danny Garcia. He's open to fighting Danny Garcia in the sometime in the near future over in Dallas, Texas.
I would say stay away, Danny Garcia, because he will definitely stop Danny Garcia. And I mean, what does Danny Garcia gain from fighting him? Possibly a title. That's not a good look for Danny Garcia at all. Errol Spence, he has a great look. I mean, the dude sit there and, I mean, but you never know, though, because even though Danny Garcia wasn't going to beat Keith Thurman, he still is a resourceful guy. He wins against people who, when people count him out and say that he's not supposed to win, Danny Garcia still wins. But my gut feeling tells me that he would stop Danny Garcia. But when you say that about Garcia, he perseveres and he, you know, fights through it and sometimes beat these guys. So,
yeah.
But I would stay away from Danny Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, you did have that time when he was going up against Matisse, and a lot of people thought Matisse would be able to take out Danny Garcia. And, you know, Matisse ended up being outboxed throughout that whole fight. So that kind of like, you know, exceeded expectations there. But, I mean, you still have those instances where, you know, Garcia ends up fighting a Mauricio Herrera or, you know, Rod Salka or Sammy Vargas, where it kind of like looks like, you know, why is he fighting those guys? Or he just performs a little bit under people's expectations. And so he can't really do that against the likes of Errol Spence, who's, you know, on paper, you know, more skilled than Danny Garcia is. So we can't really, you know, take many breaks in that particular matchup if it does happen. So we'll see if Danny Garcia is ready to step up and take that challenge or not. On that note, you know, pretty much put an end to this episode of the show. We'll look forward to the next episode next week. Coming in on July 2nd, we'll probably, not July 2nd, but we'll have something here probably June 25th here. We'll probably have a little small show looking forward to what's going to happen with Manny Pacquiao and Joe Horn, which looks like it'll end up being on ESPN. He had an announcement by Top Rank Promotions that they have a little deal going on with ESPN to show fights on there. So we might be seeing Pacquiao Horn as the first fight that'll be on ESPN networks on the Top Rank promotion. So we'll see how that's going to turn out, because we may possibly get Terrence Crawford against Julius Ndongo on ESPN if that fight gets put together. So that's something to look out for. But next week we'll have same time, 7:30 on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio. And like I say, at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is a hit and I get hit, not a standing trade. On that note, I'm out.